Hello, you're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have had the courage and taken the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I'm Lissa Marquardt, and I am a certified career and life coach. As a career and life coach, I am always learning and attending conferences to grow my awareness and techniques on how to guide my clients. And one of the aspects of my work that particularly fascinates me is manifestation, or how thoughts become things, and that we can and do create our own reality. But I could never really grasp why or how that works. And to be honest, I never felt that comfortable asking clients to buy into something, even if I couldn't understand it or explain it. So last year, I began studying the work and practices of Dr. Joe Dispenza. His passion lies at the intersection of neuroscience, epigenetics, and quantum physics, which is basically the fact-based science behind manifestation. And because everything that I read about in his work made so much sense to me, I decided to commit myself to a 7-day conference in Cancun to learn as much as I could about it. I was absolutely not disappointed, and I came away with tools and techniques and an understanding that I have used successfully on myself and with my clients in relationship to manifestation. But one of the things I wasn't really deeply aware of at that time was the multitudes of individuals who had always attended those kind of conferences in the hopes of being cured of illnesses and debilitations. And there were many at that conference with audience of about 4,000 talking about their healings and the recoveries. But there were many more that were just simply there with hope and conviction that this could maybe be the one thing, after pretty much everything else had failed, to give them their quality of life or simply their chance at life back again. My guest today was one of those individuals at the Cancun conference last December. I unfortunately didn't have the opportunity to know her then. But I recently attended another Joe Dispenza conference in Nashville last October, and I got to hear her story and learn about her journey and where she has come from. Her name is Lindsay Davis, and at age 30, she was bedridden and wheelchair-bound with myalgic encephalomyelitis. She didn't even have enough energy to brush her hair or to feed herself, and doctors told her there was no cure or hope for improvement. And at age 35, Lindsay discovered Dr. Joe Dispenza. And today, she's out of bed, she's out of her wheelchair, she's healed, and she has her life back. We're going to go to break, and when we return, Lindsay's going to join us and share her story of inspiration and hope. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream. I'm your host for the show. I'm Lissa Marquardt, and I am a certified career and life coach. My passion is guiding others to find and live theirs. My guest today is Lindsay Davis. At age 30, she was wheelchair and bedbound with myalgic encephalomyelitis. She was told there was no hope and no cure, and today she's paved her own road. She's out of bed, out of her wheelchair. She's vibrant and alive. And she's inspired to pass along her message of hope and inspiration for others. So, Lindsay, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here.
Great. So here we are at the Joe Dispenza conference in Nashville last October, and you're up on a stage in front of thousands of people telling your story of healing when there was absolutely no other solution or cures available for you from the medical profession to get your life or your energy back. But you did it, and you did it your own way. It was such an inspiring story and such a good message of hope for others that might find themselves in a similar situation. So I just knew I had to have you on the show. So thank you for taking the time and being willing to share that with us.
Yes, of course.
I was just, when I first met you and I thought about you know, the story of where you came from. So you were age 30, and so tell us a little bit about how you got diagnosed, what were the symptoms, what was going on?
When I first got sick, it was mild, and I would say I would go out with my friends or try to work or even just work out because I love swimming, so I would swim. The next day, I would crash, and I wouldn't be able to move or get out of bed. Anything that I tried to do that required energy, the next day I would crash.
Wow.
And that's what they call it. They call it post-external malaise because your body has so much energy to use, and then you crash afterwards. And that happens when you have a mitochondrial dysfunction because your mitochondria is the powerhouse, the energy of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
And so when your mitochondria is not working correctly, then you don't have energy. And so it started out where I could still do, you know, live a semi-normal life, but I would have to plan for crashes all the time where I couldn't move. So I would plan my life around that. And so they have different stages that's called mild, moderate, and severe. And mild is where I started out at, where I would just... My energy, I could do something, but then my energy would be completely gone for a day. It could last a day to two days after. And, you know, being 30 is still semi-young, and being that young and having to like plan, like, well, can I go to my parents' house tonight for dinner? I'm going to have to plan for a crash. You know, that's the kind of life I was living at first. And, you know,
so is this the same as, I was kind of looking into it a little bit. So is it mm-hmm. also the same as chronic fatigue syndrome?
Yes.
Or that's
personally, we do not like that name.
Right.
Because it's diminishing of a pretty serious disease. They didn't know a lot about it. The doctor, scientists didn't know a lot about it, and a lot more is coming out now.
Right.
So it is same as chronic fatigue, but it's so much worse. When you hear the name chronic fatigue,
right.
you think, oh, you're slightly fatigued, and that's
yes.
not the disease at all.
Right.
And so a lot of doctors go by the name myalgic encephalomyelitis. That was the original name, was myalgic encephalomyelitis, and now a lot of doctors are going back to that name because a lot more research is coming out.
That makes sense. And to have the explanation of it coming from the mitochondria so that people understand why. It's that it's not, like my husband was diagnosed with it, and I know he couldn't hold his head up to eat. He couldn't lift the fork to his mouth. Mm-hmm. And when I heard he had chronic fatigue syndrome, I was like, doesn't everybody have that? I mean, because aren't we all tired all the time?
So, that is the normal reaction.
Right.
And that's why we don't like to say chronic fatigue syndrome.
Right.
Because it gets, there's mild cases, there's moderate cases and severe cases, but like I said, I started out mild
mm-hmm.
and I still had to plan my life around crashes.
Right.
You know, I still had to know, okay, I can get, like, even for holidays, I would say, okay, I'm going to be with family for holidays, but I'd have to make a couple days, you know, where I would crash. And that it's not a fun life. And then it gets worse, you know, it can get worse and worse to the point, you know, where you don't have any function at all, where you're completely bedridden and you can't walk. And that's the severe case. And that's what ended up happening to me is I started out mild, but I went into a very severe case. And the doctors do say that they only see about 5% of people fully recover from the severe case. It's very rare to recover.
Right.
And usually when you do recover, you have setbacks. And, you know, I have recovered now from being severe, and I have not had a setback in about 2 years at all.
Oh, that's
and I
awesome.
Don't feel like I will at this point. But
that's awesome. And so is there a cause for myalgic encephalomyelitis? Is there something that they've discovered is a reason for it occurring?
They think it can be triggered by viruses.
Mm-hmm.
I did have Epstein-Barr virus.
Mm-hmm.
I had a pretty severe case of it. And that's what they're thinking. So they're not, it's not everybody is triggered by a virus, but a lot of people are.
Sure.
And so if something happens with the virus and where your body doesn't really recover from a virus, and then your mitochondria starts malfunctioning, and then it just, you lose pretty much all function in your body.
Wow. And there was nothing they could offer you as a solution or treatment or...
They have medication to help symptoms, but nothing to cure you. And it's like you have unrestful sleep, so they'll give you sleep medication. There's not a real medication that actually helps, that you can take it and you have your energy back. There's nothing out there that will do that.
Wow.
But they have medication for sleep. They have medication if you are on the stage where you're able to walk, a lot of times you have a symptom of it is called POTS, posterior orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And so when you get up, when you stand up, your blood pressure drops and your heart rate goes up. So they have medication for that, to not to cure it again, to help the symptoms. So right. They have medication like that, but it doesn't, there's nothing out there to cure it where you're going to take it and feel normal again, or you're all of a sudden your mitochondria is going to be working again. No.
Right. And they didn't, it's not like they said, just ride it out for a while or, do this or do that and hopefully your symptoms will subside a bit, but it's just kind of, it generally progresses and doesn't necessarily get better unless you're in that unique 5%.
Yes. Usually you can have ups and downs, but that's in the mild to moderate case. Once you're in the severe case, you're not able to walk, you're not able to feed yourself, you're not able to do it, bathe yourself. Once you're in that severe case, you stay there. You don't have really ups and downs. But the mild and moderate, you do have ups and downs, and you just kind of, you learn to monitor your symptoms, and you learn to pace. They teach you to pace. And that's what the doctors tell you to do. So mild is, I think it's 25% of your life is taken away. Moderate is 50% of your life. And severe is 100%. And that's how they categorize it.
Wow. And so, again, I kind of interrupted you. So, what did you, you're 30 years old. I mean, a time when most people are at their most vibrant and, have all sorts of plans and expectations and hopes for, where they want to go, what they want to become. And so how was that playing out in your day-to-day life, and how are you handling that?
At the time, it was hard. And I did have depression, so it made me even more depressed. And it was very hard to deal with, I have a husband and I can't do things with him. I can't go out. I can't have fun. I can't go out with my friends. And at the time when it first started, before it went into the severe stage, I struggled daily in dealing with it.
Right.
And then once it got into the severe stage, it was extremely hard to deal with. But at the same time, I feel like I was just surviving. So I was just trying to get through the day. I don't know. It was mainly I was in survival for a long time during that.
Sure.
I was just trying to get through every day and, without, I don't know. It was really hard. Once I got into the severe stage where I couldn't walk or move or anything, that was when things got really bad mentally.
And how old were you when that stage began?
I was 32. I had gotten into a car accident, and that's what pushed it into the severe stage, because I was in a coma.
Wow.
And the trauma from the car accident, almost dying and being in a coma, I came out of that, and my body just completely went into the severe state of myalgic encephalomyelitis, and I couldn't walk.
Oh, so that's
after
how
the car accident.
Wow, that must have been a a big devastation, especially being 32 years old. That must have been tough.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Well, you know what? We need to go to break. And when we come back, let's hear how things started to change from there. So anyways, it's time for a break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream. I'm your host. I'm Lisa Marquardt, and I'm a certified career and life coach. My passion is guiding others to find and live theirs. My guest today is Lindsay Davis, and she had myalgic encephalomyelitis beginning at age 30. And we were just discussing what that looks like for a woman in her early 30s and how it played out. And we're moving on to how she got through it and where she is today. So, Lindsay, I just can't even imagine how tough that must have been in your 30s to kind of have life going on around you and not really having the energy or the ability to get out there and experience it like other 30-year-olds were. So what were some of the strategies and techniques and ideas that you had for like getting out and experiencing life from the perspective that you were able to?
Can you ask the question again?
So did you have support from family and friends to get you outside to enjoy things that you like to do and to just kind of be able to do them at an ability level that, you know, was appropriate for you, for the energy levels that you had? What were some of the things that kept you going?
At the time when I was actually bedridden from the disease, I couldn't go outside. And even if I had to go to the ER or the hospital or the doctor, we had to call a special bus to come get me, and I couldn't. They would have to put me on a cart to get me into in a bus to get to the doctor. So I couldn't move. I couldn't go outside at all.
And how long was that?
That was 5 years.
Oh my gosh!
I didn't walk at all for 5 years. But I did have a very supportive husband, and he stayed home with me. And I did have family, my mom and dad, that would come over daily, and they would just sit with me and take care of me. And having a support system is everything when you're that sick.
Yes,
you know, having, yeah.
And so did you watch a lot of television? Did you listen to music? What were some of the things that helped your day go by the best that it could?
Well, I would watch TV sometimes, and yeah, I would listen to music, and a lot of it was just trying to get through the day at first. I was just so exhausted. It was like I couldn't enjoy anything around me at that time.
Right. And so others just helped you, like, to feed you and get you through, you know, just all the basic necessities of life, which must have been something that they felt very privileged and, you know, to be able to connect with you and to be able to offer that to you.
Yes, I'm very, very appreciative that I had that, because I do think that's one of the things that got me through it, is having a support system.
Yeah. And so something happened and that kind of changed the way things were going for you. Can you tell us about that?
I was on YouTube and I started seeing this guy, Dr. Joe Dispenza. And I was watching the YouTube videos. I watched a lot of videos of him talking. I watched a lot of other testimonials. And it really resonated with me. And when he talks about how thoughts are energy, and how many, you can have 70,000 thoughts in a day, and how many thoughts are the same as the day before. And, you know, I really started thinking about that. And I really started thinking about, like, how am I thinking of my disease? You know, how am I thinking of my daily life? And it started giving me hope for the first time. I lost all hope. And this Dr. Joe DeSanza gave me a lot of hope. And I really realized, I mean, I think anybody is in the state that I was in, you're going to be in a negative mood. It's hard to think positive.
Right.
And so I had to really work hard at that. I really, really tried to turn my thoughts around and say, I'm going to get through this. And I really paid attention to every thought that went through my mind, you know. It did take a while because I feel I had to retrain my brain. And every time a negative thought came up or like, I'm never going to get through this, this is horrible. Mm. You know, all those things go through your head constantly.
Sure.
I feel so horrible. And I would say, no, I'm going to get through this. You know, I'm going to get better. I can do this, you know. And I just took one day at a time and was really reprogramming my mind. And then, you know, I listened to Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, and that really inspired me. And I just kind of went all in after that. I had nothing else to do. And it was the first time I felt hope, you know, so I really wanted to go all in.
Well, and so I would imagine you stumbled upon other things along the way. I mean, you know, if you were looking at YouTube, there's always somebody that's got something, some words of hope and positive thinking and, you know, manifestation. So was that true for you? And that Dr. Joe, just there was something about what his message was, or for me, it was the science behind
what he was
talking about.
That's what I always say. Yeah, Dr. Joe, like, because he tells you exactly why you're doing what you're doing. And he,
right,
you know, all the epigenetic science, the quantum physics, all that just really resonated with me. And that's what made me, between that and then I had my first meditation I ever tried. I had a very significant experience with the meditation with him. So between those two things is why I went all in on Dr. Joe, because I did watch a lot of manifestation and changing your thoughts. But the Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself book really, I felt, was like, I reread that so many times.
Yes.
You know, I did everything to try to change my thoughts, but his program worked the best for me.
Yes.
Any other?
I agree. I remember I was driving from Rosemary Beach, Florida to Charlotte, North Carolina, and I listened to that book the entire way, and it made that drive so short and so interesting. Mm-hmm. And normally things like epigenetics and quantum physics are not something I necessarily would be listening to while I'm driving along, but the presentation in the book made it so user-friendly that I finally said, oh my gosh, I'm finally understanding how all this works, instead of it just being something that people advise you to do.
Yes.
And that was why, that was my gateway book for sure.
Yes.
And I would think that with your energy level where it was, because our brains consume the majority of our energy just by thinking, and for you to take the energy to turn your thoughts around, that must have been like running a marathon.
Yes. I mean, and it didn't happen fast either.
Right.
You know, I was programmed for 30 years to think a certain way, so changing your thoughts was not easy.
Yes.
And in that state, that was not easy.
No. And at 5 years of laying in bed with probably practicing those thoughts under those circumstances constantly, without a whole lot else to distract you.
I honestly got to the point where I had a rubber band, and every time I had a negative thought, I'd snap the rubber band so I would realize it, and then I would say something positive. That's how in a negative spiral I was at that point. And I had to completely get out of that. And I knew I did. I knew I did, especially with, you know, explaining quantum physics and everything's energy and all your thoughts are energy. So every negative thought you have, you're just reinforcing that into your brain. And you're reinforcing your sickness and you're reinforcing everything, you know. And so I knew I had to get out of that thinking. And it's not easy. It's not easy. And it took time. But I mean, I did it. And I knew I didn't have much to lose, but I did. I just knew that this could help me, you know?
Right.
And so
how did you notice that it was working, that it was making a difference?
Well, at first, I could tell that it was a slow process. It was a slow process, I have to admit. Some people say, oh, I get healed instantly. Mine was a slow process.
Okay.
But I did see baby steps, and I did see just it started off where I was definitely in survival, and I could slowly see myself taking baby steps to get out of survival mode. And I guess that's the first really real thing that I saw was, you know, I started not worrying so much, and I started just feeling more confident. And so just my feelings changed, you know, it made me start when I started getting out of survival mode. And then after I started getting out of survival mode, I would see little improvements in my health. Like, oh, today I was able to feed myself, you know, I have the energy to feed myself without crashing. You know, I would see little improvements, and I would keep going and keep going.
That must have been huge.
Mm-hmm.
To finally see a sign of improvement when you've been laying in bed for 5 years saying, I'm just going to be worse. This is the way I'm going to be for the rest of my life. There's nothing that's going to help. I can't even imagine what a giant leap that must have felt like to all of a sudden notice just the slightest bit of energy lift of positivity and hope that must have given you.
Yes. I mean, it was definitely amazing to start seeing very small steps in the right direction.
And how long did it take for you to even notice the slightest step in that direction?
About 4 months.
Wow.
Of doing work daily.
Wow.
I did my meditations daily. I was really working hard on my thoughts. I was really working. I really made up my mind I was going to get better. Mm. And I do feel that's a huge part of it. I feel your mind is just so powerful, you know? Mm. And if you're sitting there and you're like, you're just miserable and you say, this is going to be my life, it will be your life,
correct,
you know?
Yep.
But the moment you make up your mind that, you know, this isn't going to be my life, I can do this, you'll see improvement.
Yeah. And that didn't happen overnight.
No.
But you stuck with it for 4 months.
Yes.
Which is impressive, because I think, you know, most of us are kind of out there on that treadmill of life, and all sorts of thoughts come darting throughout the day. And most of the time we're so engulfed in what's going on in our life, physically outside of ourselves, we don't have a clue what's going on in our minds. And to take that opportunity and to notice, what am I thinking? I think your rubber band snapping was a brilliant idea, actually. And I think that's a good tip for people to notice. It's like, okay, if I'm not feeling good, what am I telling myself right now?
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. And so what about your family and your support group as far as just seeing those improvements? Were they pretty easy to recognize that?
Oh, yes. They definitely recognized it. And they were very happy when they saw little improvements. But, you know, it's still hard. You're watching your family member not be able to move. And you see a little improvement, but, you know, it's still stressful for them. And I think at that point, I had more hope. And I had made up my mind. But they still didn't fully believe it. And so they had to see more, you know, of me getting better more and more.
And I love that, too, because that's where it comes from. It comes from you, not from anybody else. It's not their life. You're the one that gets to live it. And congratulations on hanging in there with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And so then ultimately that led you to the conference in Cancun where that's where you had another big breakthrough, as I recall.
Yes. Well, I slowly got to the point where I could walk a little bit. Like, I could walk. I had a bed in the living room because I couldn't go upstairs. So I could walk from my bed in the living room to the kitchen. And I would use a wheelchair, and I could go outside and do things in a wheelchair. And that got to the point where that was huge. And so I decided, you know, I am going to go. Finally, I'm going to go to a Dr. Joe retreat because I can make it now. You know, right. When I was completely bedridden, and I obviously could not make it.
Right.
And the retreat was a game changer for me. It just changed my life completely. It was like the best thing that ever happened to me.
Aww. Well, I would think just getting there alone was quite an accomplishment under the circumstances.
Yeah.
If getting to the kitchen was a challenge for you before, to get to Cancun,
yes,
is a lot farther.
It was not easy. And my husband came with me. He didn't go to the retreat, but he came with me to take care of me the whole time, to be my caregiver. And to get me to, you know, from the hotel room to the retreat, and make sure I got there in time, and make sure he brought all my stuff, you know. So he did a lot of the work to get me there. Like, I probably wouldn't have made it without him.
Nice.
But he definitely got me there. And once I was in the retreat, I just really let go, and I don't know. I just had a huge breakthrough at the retreat.
Oh, I love that. You know what? And I want to talk way more about that, but we need to take another break. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to take the risks and to have the courage to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I'm Lissa Marquardt, and I am a certified career and life coach. My guest today is Lindsay Davis, and she formerly had
myalgic encephalomyelitis.
That is a big word. Anyways.
You can call it ME. People call it ME for short.
Okay. Anyways, and she has taken on the practices of Dr. Joe Dispenza. And despite all the doctors telling her that there was no hope and she would be pretty much wheelchair and bedbound for the rest of her life, she took it upon herself to heed the messages and practices of Dr. Joe Dispenza, and her life has changed dramatically since then. And before break, we were talking about her attendance at the Joe Dispenza conference in Cancun last December, and that's where Lindsay started to see some really big changes. So before we went to break, you were just saying how you had a really big breakthrough. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I did, when I was doing my meditations at the retreat, I always, and even before that, when I was doing my meditations, I always would picture my cells healing, my cells producing energy again. And I would really picture that in my mind and see it happening. And I would see myself walking and having energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel doing that over and over again really helps. And actually, my cells started producing its own energy from just mentally rehearsing it so much. And
love that.
I could feel the energy coming through my body at the retreat. It was the first time I felt literal energy just going through my body, and I never had an experience like that.
Wow.
And I was doing a walking meditation, and I was able to walk completely by myself on the walking meditation. It
wow.
was the most amazing thing.
And how long had it been?
It'd been 5 years.
Okay. My gosh.
And so it was, and my husband video recorded the whole thing. We have it still on it. I watch it to this day. And it was just, it had to be one of the most amazing days of my life.
Yeah.
The most amazing day of my life.
Yes.
And feeling like being able to just walk. You have no idea when you haven't walked in so long how amazing. Mm. And it's, you take it so for granted. You
yes.
take, and I'll never take another day for granted in my life, ever.
Oh, I love that so much. I wish I could have been there when you did that. I can't even imagine what that's like. I did witness some people having a similar experience in Nashville, and it's like a miracle being presented to you right before your eyes, and it's one of those things we don't get to see very often in life.
Yes, and there's words can't even describe how it felt, you know. Mm-hmm. And when my dad, actually after the retreat, my dad picked me up from the airport, and I came running up to him, and he had like tears in his eyes, and he was like, "Where's your wheelchair?" And I was like, "Dad, I don't need it anymore."
Oh my gosh!
And so the whole thing was just amazing, and I haven't used it since. And I still meditate daily. Like right now, I'm doing 3 hours a day.
Good for you.
I do 90 minutes in the morning and 90 at night, and I still work on, you know, I see my cells working correctly. I see my mitochondria producing energy. And in my meditations, you know, I see my healthy body, and I do feel a lot of it. You know, you have control over a lot more than you
yes,
think you do.
Exactly.
I mean, and epigenetics proves that, you know. That
yes.
And our environment, our thoughts.
Yes. And what I especially love that I've gotten out of the conferences is the fact that that UC San Diego is behind the research, and their whole medical profession is starting to take note and pay attention, and that there is evidence to support this. And I think one of the key elements, of course, is the meditation, which, you know, mm-hmm. some people think is, I don't know what a lot of people think, but I know it's not a part of their daily practice. Mm-hmm. But so from my experience, and I wanted to ask you the same thing, is I know it gives me more energy. It gives me more clarity. Mm-hmm. It's just a chance to sit and let things simmer down and to kind of focus on what it is that you want to see happen in your life. And it mm-hmm. allows the rest of your day to feel way better than it would have if you didn't.
Yeah.
Is that true for you?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And I do feel, you know, I can feel when I'm lower in my brain waves, you know, and I can feel I'm in theta and going back and forth between theta and mm-hmm. delta.
Definitely.
And when you're in that state, your body can be programmed, you know?
Yes.
So, because it's the same state as hypnosis. So when you're thinking of the healing and it actually starts happening on a cellular level.
Absolutely. And it is very hard to understand, you know, if you haven't exposed yourself to this kind of information. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there are people like Dr. Joe and some other, you know, thought leaders that are out there they're trying to make the information palatable to people so that they can see the science behind it, that it's not woo-woo and weird. And I love the fact that you are a walking testimony mm-hmm. to exactly what can be accomplished. And so unbelievably, we're already out of time, but if there's somebody that's got some sort of a debilitating disease or, you know, some sort of an illness that they've been told that there's no hope, what would you suggest for them?
I would suggest to not listen to there's no hope.
Yes.
As soon as you get that in your mind, there won't be hope. You have to always have hope. And your mind is so powerful, you know, just don't go down the road of what doctors tend to say, you know, and really just keep going at it, you know, and keep working at it. And healing, for me, it was not linear. It had many ups and downs. It wasn't just like all of a sudden I was healed. I had to work at it, and I had ups and downs. And during those downs, you can't let yourself mentally go back down the wrong path. You have to keep picking yourself up and keep going and realize it's a long road, but you can do it. And your mind is so powerful, and just keep at it.
Absolutely.
Keep going.
Yes. Lindsay, I am so excited for you and your future. And thank you for inspiring others and sharing hope for others too. That's huge. And if someone is sitting in that position, Google Dr. Joe Dispenza and see if there's something that might trigger some sort of resonance for you that might be of help, and see what happens. Anyways, that's our show for today, and I appreciate you listening in. Stay tuned next month, and in the meantime, now is your life. Get out there and really live it.